Good morning, and welcome to the Thursday, April 8th, 2021 meeting of the House Education Finance Committee. Remote hearings are held in accordance with House Rule 10.01. This rule has been posted online and is linked to in our public meeting notice on the House website. All remote hearings will be recorded and live streamed by House Public Information Services. Members, you have the contents of your virtual packets available to them, and for the public, these materials have been posted online. Members, if you're looking for all these items in one place, they're attached to the calendar event you have that Ms. Burt sent for today. To get on the list to be recognized by the chair, members using the Zoom interface have the ability to raise their hand via the app. Ms. Burt will place your name on the list to be recognized. Ms. Sunderland, would you please call the roll?
Chair Dabney.
Present.
Vice Chair Sandstead.
Present.
Representative Cresha.
Present.
Representative Bennett.
Present.
Representative Daniels.
Present.
Representative Damath.
Present.
Representative Drazkowski. Representative Erickson.
Present.
Representative Feist.
Present.
Representative Jordan.
Present.
Representative Marcourt.
Present.
Representative Mueller.
Present.
Representative Richardson. Representative Richardson. Representative Thompson.
Thompson, present.
Representative Wolgamott.
Wolgamott, present.
Representative Zhang.
Zhang, present.
Representative Joachim.
Present.
And that is the roll, and we do have a quorum.
Thank you very much, Ms. Sunderland. Ms. Representative Jordan, have you had the opportunity to review the minutes from our Wednesday, April 7th meeting? And if so, would you like to move approval of those minutes?
I have, Chair Dabney, and so moved.
Thank you very much. Are there any is there any discussion to the Jordan motion?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Erickson.
I just have a question about, did we always use the present tense for the Zoom sentence that says this is broadcast when everything else is a past tense verb in the minutes? I just am asking if that was just a standard procedure that we did, and I don't have a problem with it. It's just that, you know, it's a different tense from what's recorded from the minutes.
You can take the English teacher out of the school, but you can't take the English teacher away. Ms. Sunderland, do you have a tense preference?
She is correct. I see that now. It has been standardly used previously on the minutes. So they will all look as that. We certainly can change it if need be.
No, I would not change it. It's just that I just noticed it the other day. Thank you very much.
That's a good call. I always appreciate your eye, which is sometimes why we have you look at the minutes.
There you go. Thank you, Representative Erickson. Thank you, Ms. Sunderland. Hearing no further discussion, all those in favor of the Jordan Amendment, please signify by saying aye.
Motion.
Aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Thank you very much. With that, Representative Joachim, would you please take over the chair?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Today we're going to conclude our official committee work with the marking up of the Education Finance Bill. Our process this morning will be to first move House File 1065 before us. Then we'll move the DE amendment before us, but we'll not take any formal action until we see other amendments. Just as a reminder, the DE1 was what we've already gone over in committee. So the committee will consider, I think the first amendment we have on the docket this morning is A9. The one will vote on that amendment, vote on the DE, vote on the 1065, and then be done and send it on its way. Chair Dabney, would you like to make a motion to move House File 1065 before the committee with the recommendation it be referred to the Tax Committee?
Madam Chair, thank you. Yes, I move that House File 1065 be before the committee with the recommendation to be referred to the Tax Committee.
Thank you, Chair Dabney, for your motion. Members of the committee and members of the public were looking to vote on this final motion at 11:55 a.m. today. Now that the bill is before the committee, Chair Dabney, would you like to move the DE1 before the committee?
So moved, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As a reminder, we did walk through the DE1 again on Tuesday of this week, and yesterday we heard from the public about the DE1. Now we'll move to marking up the DE1. Before we take any formal action on the DE1, we'll first discuss and take action on the A9 amendment. Chair Dabney, I understand you're bringing the A9 amendment. Can you please introduce your amendment?
Madam Chair, before I do that, I understand that Representative Kreisha has his hand up.
I am so sorry about that. I missed that. Representative Kreisha.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Chair Dabney. Just a couple clarifications on the process. So we have one amendment. There was two posted. So is the A2 officially withdrawn?
Representative Dabney?
Yes, my understanding is the A2 has been withdrawn.
Okay. Madam Chair? Madam Chair?
Representative Kreisha, sorry, Representative Kreisha, follow up. I was trying to keep my mic off so there was no feedback. My fault.
Yep, that's fine. And so then, and just by way of process, we are voting on the amendments, right? We'll have to do a roll call. Is that correct? Because we have done in the past, or just so I know the process.
Representative Kreisha, yes, we will have to do a roll call on the amendments.
Okay, very good. And then 11:55 is when we intend to pass the bill out. Okay, that's all I needed to know.
Thank you, Representative Kreisha. Chair Dabney, go ahead and explain the A9 amendment.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. The A9 is an author's amendment. Contains some technical corrections, a handful of other provisions related to a career technical education levy interaction that we need to account for, and some changes to the ethnic studies language as it relates to standards. A little more specificity for members. The levy increases the local option, or the levy interaction, excuse me, increases the local option aid to offset additional levy costs associated with career and technical education revenue. It does this by reducing the appropriation for expanded rigorous coursework grants by $270,000 per year in the first biennium and $470,000 per year in the TAILS to reflect the impact of that program on the career technical education levy. In the ethnic studies area, it adds a definition of ethnic studies and a requirement that MDE employ dedicated ethnic studies staff to provide expertise for adopting ethnic studies standards into the academic standards and providing assistance to schools in implementing those standards. It also adds youth currently enrolled in Minnesota public schools and other stakeholders that represent the ethnic, racial, and geographic diversity of Minnesota, including gender and sexual orientation, immigrant status, and religious and linguistic background to the list of stakeholders whose advice must be considered in development of statewide academic standards. It updates the para-educator training language by adding a requirement that paraprofessionals must be given up to 5 days after a new student transfers in the school during the school year to review the student's IEP. And then I think it's fair to identify the other changes in the A9 amendment as technical, clarifying the effective date of the K-3 dismissal prohibition, clarifying language related to college entrance exam reimbursement, allows grow your own grant recipients to apply to use grant funds over a period of 5 years rather than 2, clarifies the effective date for the Student Support Personnel Aid Program as fiscal year 23 and later, clarifies the recipient organization in Rochester of the Tier 2 Education Partnerships Grant. With that review, Madam Chair, I would ask that Ms. Adrians be given the opportunity to walk us through the final fiscal items and explain the bottom line, if she would.
Thank you, Chair Dabney. Ms. Adrians.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And members, I believe Ms. Burt is going to share the change item page that has been updated to reflect the A9 amendment. Otherwise, if you have it in front of you, you can follow along that way as well. And Chair Dabney did a good job of explaining the change that will be reflected in the numbers for the bill. On the line that states seat, it's line 17 of the change item page. Thank you so much, Ms. Burt. It now is labeled CTE, LTFM, and VPK changes. This is the amount of aid that needs to be directed to offset any levy interactions. The committee was given no additional levy target. So in order to keep the levy target at zero, if there are levy interactions from any of the proposals within the bill, then the bill has to pay for those with aid, and it's done so through that local optional aid interchange that Chair Dabney referenced. So this amount on line 17 is now $8.475 million in fiscal year 23, and in the tails, it's just under $10.7 million. And then if you'll quickly look down to the expand rigorous coursework line on line 28, the program was proportionately reduced to reflect that change. So it is now $3.73 million in each of the first two fiscal years. And in the tails, it's $3.53 million. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Ms. Adrians. I believe I was just corrected that we do not need to do a vote on the amendments unless they've been asked. So unless there's a motion to a request to do a roll call on the amendments, we're just going to use a voice vote. Does anybody have any questions on or discussion on the A9 amendment as it's been walked through? Wait a second to see if there's any hands up. Seeing none, if you want to unmute your mics. All those in favor of the A9 amendment, please say yes.
Aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. With that, the A9 amendment has been adopted. Chair Dabney.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, members, for that vote. Before us is the bill as amended. With House File 1065 as amended, we make a strong statement for Minnesota's students, families, and schools by providing stable and predictable funding for public schools, proposing a 2% increase in the general education formula each of the next 2 years, and then making a down payment for the 2 years following that of 0.5%, but importantly then indexing the formula to inflation starting in fiscal year 26. There's an odd tradition in this state, in this country, of making public education go hat in hand to the public, while other local jurisdictions are allowed to, say, adjust their local levies. We make school districts go out and run levy referendum campaigns, distracting them from their core mission and creating expenses. By indexing the formula to inflation, we assure districts that they can plan long-term on programs and staffing needed to make sure that we have equitable opportunities for all students and build strong school climates. We increase investments in special education and English learner cross subsidies so that those cost areas for school districts can be better managed and those students better served. We extend and make permanent 4,000 slots in the voluntary pre-kindergarten program so that the children in that program today's younger siblings know they've got a place in school when they get there. And we make sure that geographically large districts with high transportation costs get additional transportation sparsity aid to help manage those costs. We make a historic commitment to increasing the number of teachers of color and American Indian teachers in Minnesota schools. The research members here is clear. Our students of color and American Indian students do better when there's someone who looks like them in the front of the classroom, in the hallways, and in the principal's office. We need to put great effort into changing that so that Minnesota's lowest, almost record in the country, lowest percentage of teachers of color and American Indian teachers in our teacher corps move significantly. And you know what? I've always said, it's good for the white kids too, to see people of color and American Indian people in positions of leadership and trusting, building trusting relationships. We make a historic commitment there through a variety of statewide comprehensive strategies. We then shift to prioritizing student and teacher needs, increasing the number of school support personnel, school counselors, social workers, nurses, psychologists, and the like, because we know that those personnel are needed now more than ever. We provide funding to ensure that paraprofessionals get the training that they need to meet the needs of the students that they care for. And through some of our work, we establish a career pathway for those paraprofessionals who choose to move on to become licensed teachers. We include elements of Governor Walz's Due North plan, improving Indigenous education for all Minnesota learners. And we work through programs, the education partnership programs, and other proposals such as the Sane Foundation and Girls in Action to strengthen community ties, because we know that children don't exist separate from their families and families separate from their communities. We make targeted important investments in rigorous coursework and make important policy changes to make sure that the students in those classes look like the students in the rest of the building. As you know, members, we've incorporated Chair Richardson's policy bill that came to us with just a few slight tweaks. That is a strong proposal that looks to make sure that we have equitable climates in our schools and help to make sure that all Minnesota students can thrive in school and succeed. When the roll call comes, I'll ask for your yes vote. Madam Chair, thank you. Yield back to you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I have to apologize to the committee. Clearly, 2 weeks off has made me very rusty on chairing a committee. I forgot that we need to adopt the DE1 amendment. Seeing no further amendments to the DE1, we're going to move to a voice vote to adopt the DE1 amendment before we move to other member questions. Could you please unmute your microphones? As a reminder, this is not the final vote on the bill. This is just the vote on the DE1 amendment. So any questions? Really quickly on the DE1 before I move it. Seeing none, all those in favor of the DE1 amendment, please say yes.
Yes.
Aye.
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 Those opposed say no.
No.
The motion prevails and the amendment has been adopted.
Chair,
with that, members,
Chair Joachim, if you could just restate that this was the DE1 as amended that we just adopted.
Thank you, Ms. Burt. The DE1 as amended has been adopted. With that, members, any questions on the final bill for the chair? I want to make sure I'm not seeing any questions, but I know that Representative Kreisha would probably like to make a comment. Representative Kreisha.
Are we ready to final closing comments?
Yes, we are, sir.
The first thing, Representative Erickson, would you also like to go before myself?
Yes, Representative Kreisha, and yes, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Erickson. I know, I'm sorry. This is all me throwing everybody off. So, Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And committee, the one thing I wanted to mention, I understand as a former committee chair how this works. And, of course, you want to bring forth those policies and that finance, which is important to you. I just don't happen to agree with some of it. But I did want to point out that from yesterday's testimony from a couple of teachers who are striving to move into a higher tier and work, commenting on the content test and their inability to pass it for a variety of reasons, that that's not a legislative matter as far as what's in the content test. That is under rulemaking by Pelsby. And so we need to know, what the statute says versus what I think is being promoted, that's the legislature that's at fault. But we don't have anything to do with the content of a test, whether it's pedagogy or content, the
Professional Educators Licensing and Standards Board has rulemaking authority, and they contract with Pearson. They have a review team, and they do a variety of reviews. And I've asked Mr. Luisi, who is the executive director, to respond to a question I had about whether or not when you teach in an immersion school in your native language, whether or not there is a test that's provided for them, because that, to me, makes much more sense. So I wanted to clarify that first. Secondly, I will comment on the fact that, from my perspective, this is a time for districts and charters to focus on lost learning, learning that our students haven't received over this last year. And so my preference would be, you know, that policy focuses on that. And to remind all of us that face-to-face learning is so important for our youngest learners when they're learning to read, for example. And I don't think we have enough concentration in this bill for that. You know, students want their teachers to care for them, and I know our teachers do. I know I certainly did over all my years of teaching. But teachers need to address the intellectual needs and the social-emotional needs of the students. And so that emphasis needs to be there. And students want high expectations from their teachers. So that would be where my emphasis would be, and I do hope that that's what happens in our classrooms. Finally, I want to comment on the fact that there are almost 30 changes to the tiered licensure system. And this is just a third year of that licensure system. So I find it just amazing that stakeholders, and I don't know who they were because it certainly didn't include me or those of us who worked on this this new licensure system back in 2017 that took effect in 2018. But, you know, to have 30 changes or almost 30 changes in one bill is just astounding. You know, you would think that if there are changes needed, that a working group would convene and we would proceed in that way. So, you know, I find that problematic and will not be voting for the bill, not primarily based on that, but that's one of my reasons. You know, with that said, I understand, again, your positions and, you know, respect them, even though I don't support them. But thank you for allowing me to make those comments about those two areas. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Feist.
Thank you, Chair Joachim. I just wanted to say generally that I am really very excited about this bill. When I decided to run for office, a big motivating factor for me was addressing the opportunity gap. And I'm just really thrilled to see a lot of provisions in this bill that would, you know, when I was running for office, I just kept saying we want to have generous, consistent, and equitable funding. And I feel like those values are really reflected in this bill. And so Chair Joachim and I the other day were talking about mandates and how they don't have to be a dirty word. And I'm really thrilled by the combination of policy and of funding. And I do believe that it will take great strides towards ensuring that Minnesota schools are more equitable and that all kids in all schools, no matter where you live in the state, are going to be able to thrive. So thank you. It's just been a great committee. And thank you, Chair Dabney, for your leadership.
Thank you, Representative Feist. I just want to also take the time to thank Representative Chair Richardson and Chair Dabney for putting together this bill with children at the center. We are facing, you know, unprecedented times with the pandemic and our students and our teachers pivoting to distance learning and then coming back into the classroom and everybody working so hard. But we have to always make sure that we're meeting students where they're at. And I think with this bill, our districts will have the resources to be able to do that. So very happy with this bill. And I wanted to make sure to see if there's anybody else before I move to Representative Kreisha. Give it a second. Not seeing any other blue hands. Representative Kreisha.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just by way of courtesy, and you know, our time management today is exemplary. I just wanted to extend over to Representative Drazkowski and make sure that if he wanted an opportunity, I would certainly welcome that before I go.
Representative Drazkowski, any comments?
I don't have a lot of comments, Madam Chair. I abhor most of this bill. I disagree with a lot of the premise around it. And as Representative Erickson, I think, pointed out so eloquently, I think I do respect your efforts on the left, the Democrats, to enact your agenda. You have the majority, but I disagree with it vehemently, and we'll be voting against this bill. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Drazkowski. Representative Kreisha.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So first of all, I'll extend my congratulations and thanks to Chair Dabney. In the best of times and the worst of times, and we certainly saw the worst of times with the Zoom setup, I think we did as well as we could. And I thought you were fair in your allocation of our time and our questions and respecting us. And for that, you need to be commended on that and thanked. And so thank you for that. My regret is that we weren't in person, where I could have, been a little bit more passionate and try to get your ear up a little bit. But you know what? We'll take what we can get. So thank you again. And thank you for moving things efficiently. To all the other members, thank you for the thoughtful discussion. You have a big task in front of you of moving this bill. We recognize that. That being said, with all the opportunities and solutions that you're trying to put in front, there are still some large gaping deficiencies that I think need to be addressed. And unfortunately, addressing those in committee will be challenging, and therefore the House floor will be a little bit of a better place to do that. We've merged the large mandates and the large policy bill here, but this is a finance committee and we should focus primarily on the finance provisions. I will just raise a couple of points of interest that I find that I need to reconcile before I could recommend a yes vote. One of the things that I see in this bill is there's a lot out there, but we don't really put provisions and we don't really focus on the reopening of schools. And perhaps we'll hear more about that in the ways and means of the tax or as it moves through to the House floor, but really prioritizing and recognizing what has happened in this last year, I think is going to be critical. I think it's a large task, but we're going to have to measure the learning loss and account for that. We can't just add a whole bunch of policies and mandates and even funding without recognizing what holes need to be plugged and what students will need to regain their footing academically. So that is something that I will continue to look through in this bill and try to figure out how the large mandates in here will go towards that. We have changes to the tier licensing, as Representative Erickson pointed out. And one of the things that concerns me in this is, and I go back to the Brown versus Board of Education decision, where 38,000 Black teachers lost their job, and many, many Black principals were pushed out. They were not pushed out because of good policy in the Brown versus Board of Education decision. They were pushed out because bureaucrats took over. And what worries me about this bill is we're moving to programs and dollars that give bureaucrats more power and that will give our schools and our students less ability and less resources in the long run. Anytime you can shift more bureaucracy, I think that does not help. I look at that just simply by the fact that the tier licensing changes, I believe, and from what I've read, will probably narrow the pathway for teachers of color and force more teachers out of the classroom. By raising the fees, I don't see how that becomes a lowering of the barrier. It increases it. And again, we've had Pelsby defending, and quite frankly, from everything I've heard of them, they seem to be defending an institution rather than defending the ways to get more teachers of color in the classroom. That's problematic for me. The other thing is, and I'm not sure what happened, and I certainly would love to hear more, but the A2 amendment was pulled today, an amendment which I actually wanted to wholeheartedly support. That's language that Representative Erickson and I have introduced, and in fact is sitting in the Black Men of Teach Color Grants, is sitting in the higher ed. I believe Representative Frazier has this out there that's sitting in our committee. So it behooves me and makes me wonder why that was pulled when that seemed to be something that would have actually moved us away from a bureaucratic closing of the doors for teachers of color and more to actually opening the doors to getting teachers of color and Black men in front of our kids. That concerns me, and I just have to reconcile that and don't know that it can be done just on the face value of reading the bill today. The lots of other things in here that are concerning and that I think schools are going to struggle with, and I'll just call it out, the very vagueness and unclarity of what the Indigenous education is going to be about is going to be challenging. There seems to be a lot of agreement between councils and what improvement is going to happen. That will create lots of uncertainty and unpredictability on what actually will be taught to students. And I wonder to myself, if we increase standards in that area, where is the achievement gap closure that will offset that? In other words, how does this actually go to reducing the large achievement gap? Because I don't see those relating to each other. I understand why they're there. I understand we have a lieutenant governor who's pushing many items very much that she believes in, but pushing an idea that you believe in that doesn't actually have merits and outcomes can be problematic, and especially when it becomes legislatively accepted, it hurts our kids in the long run. By, you know, we have a finite amount of teaching time. We have a finite amount of time where these kids are in front of a teacher or in classrooms with teachers and learning and moving along, and we have all the STEM. You know, there's so much these kids need to be successful, and we have to be very, very judicious about what we actually look for to make sure these kids are successful. And then lastly, and I'll just put this out, it's coming from me, and therefore it may have a partisan taint to it, but I don't believe that's the truth. But the last in, first out, we know hurts teachers of color. And here we see that coming back in force by creating an exemption to a seniority-based leave policy. We should not be removing quality teachers, and especially younger teachers that tend to come with a more diverse mix. We just should not be doing that. But we continue to go back and find ways to protect that policy, which in the long run, I do not believe puts more diversity in our classroom and helps our kids. So with that, Madam Chair, Chair Dabney, you have my thanks for your hard work, my respect, but today I cannot offer my vote of confidence, nor can I vote for the bill. And I look forward to the discussions going forward. So with that, I would recommend a no vote.
Thank you, Representative Kreisha. Chair Dabney, final comments.
Madam Chair, Representative Kreisha, thank you for that. I will only observe that while you wanted to get my hair up, that's challenging for anybody. But I, too, regret that we have been on Zoom the whole time and that the pandemic has kept us from meeting together. I miss those hearing rooms and the conversations that we get to have on the side that bring us all closer together in our discussions and in shared values. I hear a lot of shared values in comments that members have made across the political divide. We've got different approaches on how to achieve those values. I'll ask with that, Madam Chair, for a yes vote on House File 1065 as amended.
Thank you, Chair Dabney. I see Representative Kreisha, I see your hand up.
And Madam Chair, I don't want to refute the comments, but I do want to clarify on the ear comment. What I really meant to say was, by tapping into your passion and you tap into mine, many oftentimes we get to the core of good legislation, and that's really what I miss.
Thank you, Representative Kreisha. Chair Dabney.
Madam Chair, agreed. And thank you, Representative Kreisha, for your collaboration and your kindness this session and the previous biennium as well. It's a pleasure to work with you. Madam Chair, thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair Dabney. With that, the CLA will now take the roll call vote referring House File 1065 as amended to the Tax Committee.
Chair Dabney.
Aye.
Vice Chair Sanston.
Aye.
Representative Kreisha.
No.
Representative Bennett.
No.
Representative Daniels?
Daniels votes no.
Representative Damuth?
No.
Representative Drazkowski?
No.
Representative Erickson?
No.
Representative Feist?
Aye.
Representative Jordan?
Aye.
Representative Marquardt?
Marquardt, aye.
Representative Mueller?
Mueller votes no.
Representative Richardson?
Aye.
Representative Thompson?
Thompson, aye.
Representative Wolgamott?
Wolgamott, aye.
Representative Zhang?
Aye.
Representative Joachim?
Joachim, aye.
And I'm showing a vote that yields 10 ayes and 7 nays.
Hearing 10 ayes and 7 nays, the motion prevails, and Representative Dabney renews his motion to refer House File 1065 as amended to the Tax Committee, and the staff will direct it to make any technical corrections as necessary. And I'm going to hand the virtual gavel back to Chair Dabney.
Representative Joachim, Chair Joachim, thank you very much for your support and guidance today. Members, this will not be our last hearing. I expect that we'll have at least one, maybe two informational hearings starting not next week, unlikely, but beyond that, once we get the omnibus bills moving on the House floor, chance for us to check in on some issues that we didn't have time in this virtual structure to spend the time needed looking at issues. We'll pick up at a later date. I want to end with some deep gratitude for the people who make this place work and make it possible. I want to thank the legislative analysts, Tim Strom and Christina Parra, fiscal analyst, Emily Adrians. Folks, these people are heroes. They take everything that we say and turn it into things that make sense and read the way they should. The reviser, Cassandra McGinnis, right there, making sure it all works in a very difficult environment for the House revisers to operate in. House Public Information Services, our specialist, Chris Carpenter, gets us on the air every day and keeps us there. And the work that House Public Information Services has taken on this past year, 13 months, to make sure that the public has the opportunity to see what we're doing and to participate has been remarkable. I want to thank partisan staff, Mars Beltrandi Rudquist, for his sharp intellect and eagle eye, Ms. Burt, Sarah Burt, for her guidance of the committee and support, Jody Withers on the other side of the aisle, always a pleasure to work with, and brings a great deal to that team and a great deal to all of us. With that, members, looking forward to seeing you again. We are adjourned. Thank you very much.